This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
This is Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Hey, don't you wish that there was a way to raise well-behaved children without punishment? And maybe are you afraid that the only alternative to that is being overindulgent? Actually, there is a model that emphasizes both kindness and firmness and removes the possibility that you'll have to choose between those two extremes of punishment or overindulgence. It's called positive discipline, and the goal is not to achieve perfection, but to provide parents with the techniques to help children develop positive life and social skills such as respect for self and others, problem-solving abilities, and self-regulation. The main points of positive discipline encourage mutual respect so that any child, from toddler to teenager, can learn creative cooperation and self-discipline without losing his or her dignity. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking with Jane Nelson, who's the founder of the Positive Parenting Movement. She was a guest on the show several years ago. And she's going to help us understand the hidden beliefs that are behind kids' misbehavior and how to respond accordingly. She's going to talk about the ways to focus on solutions instead of focusing on the negative, how to encourage children without pampering or praising, and how to teach kids how to make mistakes and follow through on agreements. I'm Armin Brott. We'll get into all of that and a lot more when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Jane Nelson, who's the co-author of Positive Discipline Parenting Tools, the 49 Most Effective Methods to Stop Power Struggles, Build Communication, and Raise Empowered, Capable Kids. Jane, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about how things have changed. You've been writing about discipline for quite a while. And actually, you were on the book, you were on this show a number of years ago talking about one of your previous books. Do you think that electronics and the digital age and whatever else is going on out there has changed the way discipline needs to be done?
Oh, there are some things that never change and some things that change a lot. And I think the fact of the internet, for one thing, parents have a lot more access to information, but there's the thing that hasn't changed is there are different philosophies and different kinds of information. So there's more of it. But as we know, there's the biggest difference between positive discipline and discipline programs that are based on behaviorism, which is punishment and reward, is that it deals just with the behavior. You know, you catch kids doing good, quote, good, and you reward them, and you catch them doing, quote, bad, and you punish them. But with positive discipline, there is no punishment reward. That's all external locus of control. And if I gave you the analogy of an iceberg, the tip of the iceberg is the behavior. And underneath the iceberg is the bigger part, is the belief behind the behavior and the need for belonging and significance. And so we address the belief behind the behavior as well as the behavior and the need for belonging and significance.
Okay, talk about that a little bit, the difference between the two, because I think that so much of discipline and pretty much anything else that happens these days or anytime is in the moment. You know, we don't really have time or we don't take the time to look at what's going on behind the scenes or, as you're saying, the part under the water of the iceberg. How do you become aware of that?
Well, and that's why we go round and round in circles, because we haven't addressed the main motivation. And so if we just start that the children want to belong, they want to belong and they need to feel capable and to contribute. When they don't feel they belong, they find what we call mistaken ways to belong. And these usually look like misbehavior. So they might think, I belong only if I get your constant attention, which could drive parents crazy. Or they might think they belong only if they're the boss. This is called misguided power. And so there's all these power struggles because parents buy into that. And they fight it instead of knowing how to deal with it. Or children who don't belong may believe, I don't belong and that hurts, so I will hurt back. And this is where it gets really like a vicious cycle, a revenge cycle, because kids do hurtful, damaging things, and then parents think they've got to punish them, and then they think
right.
The kids get even, and then the parents get even, and it just goes round and round. And, of course, the one that is the most discouraged at all is where the child believes, I don't belong, I just give up.
Now, let me just have you take a step back. Belong, be a little more specific with that one. Belong in what way? What do you mean by that?
Well, this is one of the big things that has changed a lot is that research shows how important it is for children to feel a sense of connection or a sense of belonging, that I matter, that I'm significant. And actually, Arvin, I think that we've gone overboard on this. I think there are a lot of parents who really do everything they can to help their children feel that connection, to feel belonging, but they don't do the other part of the equation, which is helping them feel capable and to contribute. And what that happens, I have this little equation that I says, belonging without capability and contribution equals me generation, entitlement. And we have a lot of that going on today, a lot. And but because the other great need is to contribute, you know, the positive discipline is based on the work of Alfred Adler, who really believed that the measure of mental health is social interest or a desire to contribute. And children need both. Oh, let me go back. Say if they can't contribute, but they don't have belonging, then it's at a loss of self. If I give enough, then maybe I'll belong. And so this is why, to have a healthy self-esteem, they have to have that sense of belonging and that sense of capability and contribution.
So telling them how great they are is not necessarily going to do the job.
Not only that, it could be very harmful because that teaches kids I'm great when other people telling me are. What you do is help them feel great, capable, so that their feeling of greatness comes from the inside. I can do that. Wow. You know, this is one of the reasons why we just say, please do not pamper children. Do not rescue them. Provide a nice, safe, loving environment for them to suffer.
Yeah. Well, that's a theme that's coming up quite a bit these days in the parenting world, is the importance of failure.
And
how we can, it sounds odd to say facilitate it, but that's kind of what it is we want them to be able to make mistakes and get up and dust themselves off and realize that life goes on.
You're exactly right. And, you know, one thing that's going on these days is there's so much research and so much access to it, and that is what helps kids build resiliency. And I tell parents, you should never make children suffer, but allow them to suffer. Allow them to feel bad because they didn't get everything they wanted. And then in the process of finding out that they can survive that, they feel more resilient, they build more delayed gratification, they feel more capable. So we wouldn't scold them. Like, for instance, if a child loses their baseball mitt, they make the mistake, and they say, oh, that must feel really bad. But then you don't say, I'll run out and buy you a new one. And if they say, well, you can't buy me a new one, no, honey, but I'm willing to figure out some solutions with you, brainstorm with you, so you can figure out what you could do. So it's being supportive without rescuing.
All right, so I want to go back to the theme, then we'll probably have to come back to this a few times, but something's going on, there's some sort of a misbehavior going on, and how do we as parents know or learn the questions we need to ask or the approaches we need to take to figure out what's really going on there instead of just reacting to the symptoms instead of the underlying problem?
You know, Armin, one of the things that has always been primary for me is to not tell parents what not to do unless there's a lot of alternatives of what they can do. And so the positive discipline books are all filled with what to's. And in fact, we've even come up with this whole deck of tool cards, you know, the 52 tool cards of things to do. And, you know, in the time we have, we could take one or two and really talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about some of them.
We can't do all of them, but I hope you don't mind. I'd like to mention that if people go to my website, positivediscipline.com, we are doing a tool card of the week where we write about it, because we have them for teachers, too. We have a deck of 52 tool cards for teachers.
Right.
And actually, my son and my daughter and I have a book that's coming out in 2 weeks where we each wrote a blog on these 52 tools and got success stories from parents all over the world who shared their success stories about
right.
how it actually worked.
All right, but you got to give us a couple of them, though, here.
Well, let's just give one that is one of my very favorites. Parents talk too much, and they talk, and they tell. They tell kids what happened. They tell them what caused it to happen. They tell them how they should feel about it. They tell them what they should do about it. And kids are just rolling their eyes and if they can get away with it. And what we say, instead of telling, ask curiosity questions. And there's two kinds of curiosity questions. There's the one that are just motivating, because you don't really expect an answer. You just say, what do you need to do to catch the bus on time? That, you cannot believe how much more effective that is than to say, hurry up and you're going to miss the bus. Instead of saying, what do you need to do to catch the bus on time? Or what was our agreement about when you would unload the dishwasher? And see, this is also physiology. When you are given a command, the body stiffens and the message that goes to the brain is resist. When you respectfully ask a question, the body relaxes, and kids, the message that goes to the brain is search for an answer. So during this process, kids are much more likely to cooperate because they have felt respected by inviting them to think and to remember instead of just nag, nag, nag. And then when I said there's two kinds, there's the others, conversational curiosity questions, and this is where you really sit down with a child and ask them, well, what happened? And what do you think caused that to happen? And how do you feel about that? And you really want to hear what they have to say. You don't.
Right.
I always tell parents these are curiosity questions, not compliance questions.
Talking with Jane Nelson, who's the co-author of Positive Discipline Parenting Tools, the 49 Most Effective Methods to Stop Power Struggles, Build Communication, and Raise Empowered, Capable Kids. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Jane about some of the other tools we can implement. I'm Armin Brott.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. For more information on this latest method of CPR, visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, talking with Jane Nelson, who's one of the authors of Positive Discipline Parenting Tools, the 49 Most Effective Methods to Stop Power Struggles, Build Communication, and Raise Empowered, Capable Kids. So we were talking about basically listening or asking questions that we're not going to be trying to jam a solution down a kid's throat to. What is another approach to getting them to talk to us a little bit about what's really happening, what it is, how is this lack of belonging or lack of ability to contribute, how is that playing out in what they're doing?
Well, one of my favorite tools is the use of family meetings. And it just feels so sad to me sometimes that parents think they can't take 20 minutes a week to sit down with their kids and start out by everyone giving a compliment. So they really learn to start noticing what they appreciate and to verbalize that. But then, whatever the problem is, and parents can put problems on, kids can put problems, then brainstorming for solutions together, because positive discipline is really focusing on solutions and getting kids to learn how to focus on solutions. You know, and that could even go back to mistakes as opportunities to learn rather than something that makes you bad. But I think that when a mistake that a lot of parents make when they start family meetings is, again, they talk too much, and kids don't want it because all they do is get another lecture. But if you really sit down and say, okay, here's a problem, let's all brainstorm and see how many solutions we can come up with, and then pick one that works for everybody. Kids really do like that, and they're very clever if they're really allowed to do that. And it doesn't mean the kids run the show. It means you find a solution that everybody. In fact, we have the three R's of an H for solutions. They must be related, respectful, reasonable, and helpful. And kids really learn to figure out what meets all the three R's of an H.
And having them come up with something is going to certainly be a lot more effective in getting them on board if they're coming up with the rules, right?
Right. That is so powerful. I just wish that everyone, parent would realize that kids are much more likely to follow rules and guidelines, solutions that they have felt respectfully involved in creating. Huge, huge, huge.
Oh, and that would include the consequences as well, right? Whatever, if you are not able to do this or willing to do that.
Well, but see, this is where I would like to get away from the word consequences, because that is one of the most popular discipline tools used today by most parents. And what they really do is they try to disguise punishment by calling it a consequence. And so I have always said, forget about consequences and focus on solutions. But if you go back to the curiosity questions, helping children explore the consequences of their choices for themselves, like asking them what happened, what do you think caused it to happen, and what ideas do you have to solve the problem, that's helping them explore the consequences instead of imposing them on them. So we don't focus on consequences, we focus on solutions.
Well, shouldn't there be, though, at some point, some kind of a, I don't want to call it a carrot or a stick sort of a thing, but, you know, something where you lose a privilege or you lose some freedom to do something or whatever it is because you did not comply with the rules that you said?
Not in positive discipline. And that is okay. One of the hardest things for people to accept sometimes, because they really believe that in order to make kids do better, first you have to make them feel bad. Now, I'm going to let that one sink in for a while.
Right.
Punishment makes kids pay for what they've done. Positive discipline helps kids learn and find solutions for what they have done. And this whole idea is just so hard for parents to get up. Well, I've got to make them suffer for what they did. I've got to make them pay. That's what's going to motivate them to do better.
Right.
It doesn't happen, and the research is now showing that. Or it may provide temporary compliance, but at a great risk to the child's self-esteem, willingness to take risks. Carol Dweck has done a lot of study on this, and that kids, some kids even like the consequence of punishment because they don't have to then be responsible.
Right. Let's talk about some more solutions then. So what are some of the other things we've got? The book has got 49 of them. Some other strategies that we might be able to use.
Another real important one is the most popular discipline method used today is timeout. And it usually is designed to make kids suffer. All right, you go think about what you did and you suffer. We don't say and you suffer, but we really mean that if you go and you think about what you did and you feel bad, and we use what is called positive timeout. And what we do is get kids to first of all, understand the brain, and that when we get upset, we slip our lids. You know, we quit accessing the functioning prefrontal cortex, and we go to our midbrain. And helping kids understand that is so helpful. And what we have to do is calm down. It's teaching self-regulation, teaching kids that the value of counting to 10 or going to do something that helps them feel better, because then they'll do better. So they design their positive timeout area, and they give it a name. They might call it their cool-out space or their happy place or whatever. And here again, parents think, oh, well, that's just rewarding the misbehavior. It is not. It is teaching them self-regulation. And so after a child has designed their own positive timeout and renamed it, you don't send them to it. When they're upset, you ask, would it help you to go to your feel-good place? And you might use combine two tools, or any two, like to say, what would help you the most right now? To go to your positive timeout place, or to put this on the wheel of choice, or to go look at the wheel of choice, which is another tool. Or would it help you to put this, to go to your timeout place, mm-hmm. or to put this on the family meeting agenda so we could all work for a solution later
right.
together?
What's on the wheel of choice?
Well, the wheel of choice is just a great tool that parents and teachers just love because, it's getting kids involved. And during a calm time, you create this wheel with a bunch of pie slices, and you have them create solutions for typical problems. Like, it might be count to 10, it might be to take turns, it might be to apologize, it might be to go to another game. You know, they come up with a lot of ideas of to put it on the family meeting agenda. It's like to share and take turns. Whatever it is, they have these ideas. And then when they're having a challenge, a fight with their brother or angry at something, you can say, would it help you to go find a solution on the wheel of choice? And since they have created it, they usually like to do that.
Okay, that sounds great. All right, so you're talking about some of the other solutions I think are really interesting are about, you know, the idea that I think a lot of people have heard, but about kind of getting down to their level and having eye-to-eye contact and hugging your child, which is going to be hard if you're ticked off about something.
Well, let me comment on that.
Okay.
Isn't it interesting how we want children to control their behavior when we don't control our own?
Yeah, it is. I mean, certainly we can't expect much more from them than we're willing to do ourselves.
And yet often we do. We say, we can't always do these tools. We can't remember these tools. We're upset. They did something terrible, and so we lose it, and we think that we're actually going after them for losing control of their behavior when we've lost control of our own. So we need to learn to take some time out ourselves to calm down. You know, it's okay to say, I am very upset right now. I'll get back to you on this. Because we're not saying you can't ever be angry because you're a human being. You're going to be angry. But to take responsibility for it and to model for your kids what you want them to do. I need to calm down until I can deal with this rationally. I'll get back to you later. And by the way, one of the things I really love is this whole idea of mistakes is to practice that at dinner time. At least once a week, if not more often, to have everybody share a mistake they made and what they learned from it. So that kids really do get that mistakes are for learning and not just to make you feel inadequate, like you're a bad person.
Well, yeah. That's an interesting exercise. I'll have to try that one because I think the initial reaction is, well, I didn't make any mistakes. But we all make mistakes.
And
way more than we'd like to.
We're not taking enough risks.
Yeah. Jane Nelson's the co-author of Positive Discipline Parenting Tools, the 49 Most Effective Methods to Stop Power Struggles, Build Communication, and Raise Empowered, Capable Kids. And you mentioned a website. Would you repeat that, please?
Yes. It's positivedisciplined.com.
Okay.
And I love saying that, you know, it says co-author, that I'm co-author of this book with two of my children, two of my seven children.
Oh, wow.
Which is so much fun. So they're getting a two-generational perspective on this.
Yeah. Congratulations. Jane, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sassy.
Today's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, no, a rattlesnake! Sassy, help! You will, but first you want to talk about shelter pets? The majority of pets in shelters are there due to owner-related issues like divorce or allergies?
Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy! Sassy.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and it's time for an Ask Mr. Dad segment. Dear Mr. Dad, my first baby is due in a few months, but I'm going to miss the birth. I've been out of work for more than a year and just landed a great job. The problem is that I need to go across the country for a six-week training period that starts on my baby's due date. The company is very family-friendly, but this session is mandatory. We burned through our savings while I was unemployed, and I'm afraid that if I pass up this job, it could take months or longer to get another one. Of course, I'm sad to miss my baby's birth, but I'm especially worried about my wife. She's very supportive, but I know that this is going to be hard for her. I'm feeling really guilty. Is there anything I can do? In the grand scheme of things, 6 weeks away from your family and your wife isn't all that long, but that's no way to start off your fatherhood experience. There's no question, it's going to be hard on everyone. Fortunately, there are plenty of ways to be involved despite the distance and the time away. For the baby, record yourself reading some bedtime stories. It doesn't really matter what it is. The goal here is to help your child recognize your voice. But try to find something simple with easy rhymes and rhythm. So skip the Shakespeare for now and go with The Cat in the Hat or Goodnight Moon or a favorite book from when you were a child. Ask your wife to play the recordings for the rest of the pregnancy and then every day after the baby is born. When you finally meet your baby in person and start reciting the books that you were reading, you won't be as much of a stranger. As far as your wife goes, well, that's a little bit harder. She'll definitely appreciate regular calls, texts, and emails. Flowers and other special reminders that you love her will also help. You could hide some little love notes around the house for her to find after you left, for example. But what she's really going to need in those first days and weeks is actual hands-on help, including some time off. After you've explained to your friends and relatives why you can't be there, I'm sure they'll be happy to lend a hand. You may also want to look into hiring a nanny or mother's helper for a few hours a day to give your wife a break. Now, what about you? First, you may not have to miss the actual birth. I've heard from several deployed military dads who used Skype or other video chat to be there for the big event. Second, ask your wife to send you pictures and video clips of the baby so you can keep current on what he or she is doing. Fortunately, there's not a whole lot to see in the first few weeks, so you're not going to miss as much as you might think. Third, pick up a copy of my book, The New Father, A Dad's Guide to the First Year, which will give you a lot of information on what's going on with your baby while you're gone and on what you can do to hit the ground running when you get home. Finally, don't torture yourself. Yes, you're missing your baby's birth in the first few weeks. But if you were to turn down this job, you'd be physically home, but you'd be spending your time worrying about money instead of being fully present for your wife and your baby. In the long run, this job will enable you to better provide for your family, and that will greatly reduce the stress in your lives. If you've got a question or a comment or suggestion or something else for us here at Positive Parenting, please do let us know. We love to hear from our listeners. You can do that through our website, MrDad.com, and while you're there, you can also listen to tons of archives of shows, interviews you might have missed on the show, or interviews you didn't even know existed. It's all there at MrDad.com. We'll be back next week with another segment for you. But, you know, don't go quite yet because there's a lot more positive parenting coming right up.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this from the MrDad.com radio network.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
This is the second part of today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott, and want to thank you for staying with us. We still talk about baseball right up there with mom and apple pies being something that just says America all over it. It's the national pastime, after all. But is it, actually? I want to say that it's been replaced by other sports like football and basketball and soccer, but the reality of it is kids are losing interest in sports pretty much across the board. Let me give you some statistics on this, talking about the period from 2000 to 2013. Back in 2000, 8.8 million kids ages 7 to 17 were playing baseball, 5.4 million were playing softball. By 2013, those numbers had dropped to 5.3 million for baseball and 3.2 million for softball, a drop of about 30%. At the same time, basketball participation went down by from 13.8 million to 10.3 million over those 13 years. Soccer went down from 9.2 to 6.9. The only sport that increased was football, tackle football, interestingly, with all the talk about concussions that one went up. But that went up from 4.2 million to 4.9 million. Clearly, there's something going on with youth sports that shouldn't be going on. And according to my guest for this part of today's show, a lot of the problem has to do with coaching. Either coaches aren't being trained how to do it right, or, as happens in a lot of cases, they're feeling intimidated by parents who are putting a lot of pressure on them. We'll start talking about how to coach youth sports right when our show continues right after this.
Maria Inez Phillips talks about not recycling.
I've got too many newspapers and magazines and catalogs in there with plastic containers and bottles and cans.
Your trash can is full of recyclables?
No, it's full of trash.
You say trash, Maria. I say rubbish.
Whatever it is, I'm not going through it. I just don't get it.
Some things are very obvious, Maria.
Learn the difference between trash and recycling and more.
I put out way too much trash to think about recycling.
Visit YouGottaBeKidding.org today.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Steve Nicolarat, who's the founder of CoachBaseballRight.com. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Armin. I really appreciate it.
So I, in the introduction, was mentioning that youth sports generally have been declining since the year 2000 by about a third. I mean, if you're talking about the numbers of kids who are involved in sports of from ages 7 to 17, what's going on there? Why are kids less involved in organized sports?
So, you know, I would say that basically I think we expect too many things from sport for the kids. It's not fun for some of the kids. Expectations are very high as far as performance. And I think there are other things. I think, you know, kids can do other things. In the old days, you could be hot and bored inside your house when I grew up, or you could be hot and active outside your house, and we chose to get involved. Today, there are just so many other things that kids can do that I think is pretty normal, actually, that less of them gravitate towards to sport.
Yeah, it's interesting because there are more and more sports teams everywhere. I mean, you just see it everywhere you go, way more than when I was a kid. At least I don't think I was aware of it anyway. I mean, I'm looking at it maybe from the perspective of a parent. But, you know, at schools, and then there's the city ones, and then there's the larger leagues of different kinds that are not related necessarily to a city. So the availability of it is there, but there's just somehow it's not coming together.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens when we change the focus. You know, when, again, I say many, many years ago, the focus was was to play and to have fun and to learn some things about life through sport. And today the focus is on other things. It's on college scholarships. It's on performance. And I think those are the wrong focuses for our kids and our parents.
What should the focus be? Should it be back on those original life lessons?
Absolutely. I think first of all, the kids should have fun. And yeah, we can have expectations of the kids in terms of calling when they're not going to be at practice or hustling hard. And if you don't hustle, you're not going to play as much. And we need expectations like that, absolutely. But we don't need expectations on performance itself.
Now, what do you mean by that exactly? It seems kind of contradictory. On performance, you mean at an elite level, or
right? The result. The result is okay. That you know, if you perform well, you'll hit fourth and bat 450 and get a scholarship.
Oh, that okay. Way thinking way out there. All right.
Right. And my idea to me when I was little, the most important things I learned about life really were through sport. You know, sometimes you're not good enough, okay? That's a good lesson to learn, you know. Sometimes you got to work harder. Sometimes you have to accept an umpire's call. Sometimes you have to accept the coach's decision. Sometimes coaches, adults are right. Sometimes coaches and adults are wrong. Well, how do you work with that? How do you deal with that?
Well, it's just like life.
Just like life. And that's how it was approached back then. And today, it's all different.
Yeah.
Today, the goal is to be on the best team so that you'll be seen more often. And in our area, in the St. Louis area, and I think probably many areas around the country, we have summer clubs. And listen, they do a good job in many ways, but the emphasis is on exposure. It's on let's use this game so you can be seen and you can get to the higher level. And the result is kids don't learn how to bunt. You know, I do some hitting instructions, and kids will come in and they'll tell me, they'll say, no, we can't bunt for our club. It's against the policy. What? You can't bunt? Well, it doesn't show well.
Yeah.
You know, the game was never invented for us to show well. It was invented to create fun and competition and opportunities to learn some really cool stuff about ourselves and life.
Right.
And I'm afraid we've sort of lost that.
Well, Steve, how widespread is this focus on the elite side of things? Because I know that we try to teach that. I mean, I think I went to some lectures when I coached my youngest daughter's softball team for a little bit. We had to go to, it was a mandatory thing. I think it was Positive Coaching Alliance, which you're associated with.
Absolutely.
As well. Talking about not doing this kind of stuff. And not putting that much pressure on the kids and just making it fun. I mean, I always had it as my goal. I wanted the kids to have enough fun so they'd come back and do it again next year.
Right.
And, you know, we were certainly, my daughter was 6 years old or something like that, so we were certainly not looking at trying to breed a whole crop of professional players. But, you know, where did it go wrong, I guess? Actually, before we get to where did it go wrong, let's talk about how widespread that is, that what you're talking about, the focus on the elite, as opposed to the focus on the fun part.
So I think it's fairly widespread, because if it wasn't, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. The Positive Coaching Alliance wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be needed. And people on the lower levels wouldn't be asking these questions about, hey, what's going on? Is this really what we want? I mean, there's a lot of people out there today that are beginning to ask these questions because no matter where you turn, no matter what sport you turn to, you're hearing things like, hey, you've got to play for this club, you're going to be seen the best. Or, hey, if you're going to play for this team, you've got to only play one sport. It's kind of an interesting story. There's some high level, I'll just say, I won't even get into the sport, but I'll say sport personalities who have, you know, they coach their kids. And of course, when you're a sport personality, you kind of get a little bit more leverage or leeway than other parents who coach. And this particular one kind of demanded that the kids quit other sports while they played for his team. And the result is, one, you know, he created a team where his kid, who is a wonderful player, got a lot of exposure, and he went very quickly into organized or professional sports and is at the elite level right now.
Well, no, it's funny, you look at the some of the highest performing athletes, and they're all multi-sport players.
Well, many of them are.
A lot, I shouldn't say all, a lot, yeah.
Yes, yeah, and again, I think that most people with common sense, that's what they want. You want to approach it that way for lots of reasons, for sport reasons, and you want to approach it that way for life reasons. I mean, there's so many other friends, so many other things you learn from other kinds of coaches, so many different athletic kinds of movements you learn from playing different kinds of sports. Those are all good things. That's the era that I was brought up in. And today it's the era of specialization. It's the fear that if you don't put 100% of yourself into this, someone else is gaining and could pass you. And I never lived with that fear. You know, it wasn't like that when I was growing up. And I think today it's that fear that somebody else may catch you unless you do 100% towards this sport. And that's a pretty tough place to be if you're a kid.
Yeah. I mean, it also ruins the whole thing for people who, like, probably like 99% of the people who start a sport who are never going to get there.
Well, and that's correct. And as I was relating earlier with the situation, the professional athlete's son, everything went well. He created an environment. His kid did well. He's playing now at the highest level you can play. But where are the other kids? The other kids that gave up their other sports to allow this team to be maximized to their highest level, what about the other kids? We forget about that. You know, the game isn't designed for what people are making it now. The game's not a vehicle for college scholarship. The game is a game for other things. And I just wish that more and more people had the opportunity and the ability to actually to talk about it.
In what perspective? Talk about it as a parent, as a coach?
Well, so if you're a parent today and you say it's your first kid and you're, you know, you're 10 or 11, it appears that your kid's going to be a pretty good soccer athlete or a pretty good baseball, what happens? You meet other parents of kids that are similar to yours, and what do they tell you? Hey, if you're really going to maximize this talent, you need to go to that team. You need to look at that opportunity. And you don't know. You know, it's your first kid. And you kind of get sucked up into the game. And it keeps spiraling that way and keeps spiraling, and it never ends. And by the time you go through it, and your kid now is maybe a freshman or sophomore in college, and you've seen it, and you have other children, say, coming below, you can finally say, I don't know if I really want to spend that much time or that much money, you know, to do those kinds of things. I think there might be another way.
Right.
And people don't realize that there's another way until they're already through it.
Talking with Steve Nicolerat, who's the founder of CoachBaseballWrite.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking to Steve.
My name's Tyler, and in 9 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. But my parents won't start talking to me about it till high school.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
Thing is, my parents won't even see it coming.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, talking with Steve Nicolerat, who is the founder of a website called CoachBaseballWrite.com. Steve, so we've been talking about general what's going on with youth sports and the push towards the elite and the specialization. So your website is CoachBaseballWrite.com, but in looking through it and talking to some of the other people on your team there, it seems like it's not just baseball. It's general. I mean, you're focusing on one thing, that which is an important thing, I think, also. But the concepts are going to apply to pretty much any sport, aren't they?
That's correct. These are, you know, my background's in baseball, and you know, I played baseball. I've coached it for, you know, 38 years. I've enjoyed it. But I've also officiated at the major college level many, many years ago. And, you know, I've seen a lot of things in my time. And to be honest with you, as a dad, I've made some mistakes coaching my kids. And whenever I do a camp or a clinic, you know, I really want to share those mistakes because not every dad needs to make the same mistakes that maybe I made. And if I can keep one dad from being a goofball with his kid, you know, I've done something good, you know.
Yeah. Well, talk to us a little bit about the coaching side of things, because it seems like there's two things, at least, that I can think of that are interfering with coaching, which is having the downhill flow to interfering with kids wanting to join. Is you got coaches who don't really have the training to do it, that they kind of come in because not everybody, you know, there aren't enough coaches, and somebody says, well, why don't you do this, and you played ball when you were a kid, and you should be able to coach. So there's the lack of skills. And then I think there's also, for some coaches, there's an intimidation factor, that they feel intimidated by parents who say, you know, why isn't my kid playing as much, and how come he's not playing this position, or as you're saying, how come he's not batting fourth when he's a better hitter than this other kid? And you get cowed. So what are you doing at Coach Baseball Right to work with coaches to make sure that they can get out there and be effective and good?
So the first thing I think that you want to say is when you get a new coach, a young guy, is you want to empower him with information that is appropriate for the age that he's coaching. So a lot of times you'll start off with a guy coaching an 11-year-old team or an 8-year-old team, and you'll try to have him realize that he needs to always coach at maybe one or two grade levels above where he's coaching. He needs to be able to take the time to learn the material that he needs to learn to make it fun and engaging for the kids. You know, you've got to have the kids think it has some value, or otherwise they won't be there. So the value is in giving them good content, good practices, and make it fun when they're there. So we try to give them the opportunity through our website to have the skill set to bring good baseball drills and a good attitude in working with the kids. And a lot of the material we have is sort of philosophically based in the idea, why are you coaching in the first place? You know, why are you there? If you're there and the only reason you're there is to win games, then I think you're going to make some decisions that you might look back on and wish that you would have thought about why you were really coaching. So we try to give them not only the technical side of coaching, but we try to give them the philosophical side about the opportunity they have to really change a kid's life while they're there. And if you approach it from that perspective, I think you can give these guys a pretty good start.
Yeah, but I want to get back to this idea. I think that the coaches are sometimes afraid to do this. I'm just thinking of my sister, who's got an 11-year-old boy who's a budding fine athlete, but he's got some entitlement issues and some attitude issues. And she was telling me that he pouts if he's not playing, and he sits on the bench and he doesn't clap for his teammates and stuff. And I told her, you know, call the coach and tell him to bench your son. That's just unacceptable behavior for a team player, and he needs to have some consequences. But the coach was really very reluctant to take responsibility for that, and I think he ended up doing it, but he kind of blamed it on my nephew's mother instead of, you know, doing what he should have done as a coach, I think. Tell me
You're
if
right.
I'm wrong. You know, he should have said, look, this is not okay. We're team players, and you got to get up there and, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, you're going to clap for your teammates and support them and everything else. And if you're just going to sit and pout, you're going to sit and pout by yourself.
So the most important thing that a coach does, or a teacher for that matter, I teach computer science in the classroom, the most important thing we do probably has very little to do with baseball or computer science. It's helping kids grow up. It's helping kids through these difficult times. Hey, I'm not playing. I'm unhappy. I made an error. I screwed the umpire made a bad call. I got screwed. you know, all those kinds of human things, right, that kids go through. Everybody goes through it. The question is, how does a coach want to view it? To me, those are opportunities that a coach has to help shape that kid. And that kid will remember a heck of a lot more about that opportunity, about that event, and that coach than he ever will about winning games. Now, trying to get that coach to understand that is part of what we try to do in our website, is that, hey, this is why you're there. The baseball stuff is great, but this is the real reason why people coach, is to help kids through those issues.
So in the work that you're doing, it's obviously probably not a big enough sample size, but do you think that you're going to actually drive a resurgence in kids being involved in sports?
Well,
all right, or have you already started to see that in the teams that you're working with, that they're getting more players coming in and there's less obnoxious behavior and everything else?
I think we help to the extent that one of the big things that I have my coaches and organizations look at is, I'm a really big believer in a parent meeting, right? An expectational meeting. So when you guys, when they start their season, they meet with the coaches and they meet with the parents and they talk about little things like, hey, this is what you do during the game as a parent. You know, there's a difference between rooting and hollering at the umpire or hollering at the other team. There's a difference between rooting for your children and being behind the dugout and telling your kid what to do. There's opportunities to help your kid grow when he doesn't play well. There are all sorts of opportunities for growth as far as a little thing like the kid can't make practice today. Okay, well, you know, the kid should call the coach, not the mom or dad. How about the idea of commitment, you know, with kids playing soccer and baseball and the seasons overlap? The idea that commitment is committing to the expectations of the coach before the season starts, and living up to those expectations.
Right, right.
And helping the child realize that, oh, today I've got a big soccer game and just a regular baseball league game, but it's the middle of June, so I think I'm going to go and play soccer. You know, that's a selfish way of approaching it. But if you give kids and parents an opportunity to think about things beforehand, what I found is that most parents are really, really open as long as they know what's expected beforehand. So to have that meeting of expectations is a really, really good thing.
Now, what do you do as a parent if you see that the coach is not doing a good job, that the kids are not learning proper technique, or that they're just not learning what they ought to be learning?
So if it's a matter of a baseball thing, I think you ask him, hey, coach, would you mind if, could I give you a hand on some of these things? I don't know baseball either, but I've been lucky enough to find some resources where I think I may be able to help you with some of the technical stuff if you would allow me to do that, if you're open to that. And you sort of ask him to allow you in, and maybe he'll learn from that. The other thing you can do is, if it's an issue on the kid growing up, opportunity for growth, we say, then I think maybe you talk to the coach and say, hey, how do you feel about, you know, this is what my son did, and would, you know, I kind of was hoping that you would help us out maybe and talk to him about it as well. I mean, I've had people here where I work at St. Louis U High, they've actually called and said, hey, Steve, you know, Johnny really talked poorly to his mom. Would you mind sitting him a game, you know? And you know, there are times that if a parent needs some help with something, you're open to helping them. That's okay. That's what we're here for. But I do think a parent has to offer part of the solution when they want to talk to the coach, instead of just identifying the problem,
right,
and saying I'm unhappy. You have to go one step further with that.
Steve Nicolarat is the founder of CoachBaseballWrite.com. There's all sorts of great resources there. You can join as a membership and get even greater resources, but there's a lot of stuff I found on there that's completely free. And it's CoachBaseballWrite, all one word, .com. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Armin, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.